This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Pink Saturday is a huge street party that happens every year on the night before the San Francisco Pride Parade. Thousands of people from all over the Bay Area and the country come out to dance in the streets of the city's Castro District. But how many know the history behind the celebration? The first Pink Saturday was in June of 1990, when a coalition of AIDS activists held a march through San Francisco that ended with a big impromptu street party. The march was one of the last events of a full week of protests in the city. That week of historic queer activism 25 years ago still has echoes today. KALW's Lisa Bartfai explains.
About 80 people have gathered in a big, sunlit meeting room at the Women's Building in San Francisco for a memorial. Photos of young men and women have been hung on the walls.
We will begin with a blessing from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence.
I mean, there's so many people that we lost, but Michael Spain was my partner who died when he was 30 in June of 1990.
You know, just kind of remembering what all these people who died and didn't need to die.
One of my earliest loves, his name was John Casey, and I put his photo on the wall. But yes, he's one of the main reasons that I came, is to remember him. I remember him every day.
Gary Noriega, Carolyn Helmke, and Jonathan Winters came today to remember loved ones they lost to AIDS. The people here, those on the walls and those here in person, were all activists who fought together during the height of the AIDS crisis in San Francisco. Also on the wall is a big banner that reads, "Every 7 minutes, someone dies of AIDS." That statement was true in June of 1990, when the banner was created and used in a historic week of protests at the 6th International AIDS Conference. The conference brought the world's leading doctors and researchers to San Francisco. Thousands of AIDS activists also showed up. One of them was Ingrid Nelson. She'd just graduated from college at the time.
There were people that had traveled from all over the world to be there. And so it all felt like a bigger scale, like something new was happening.
Nelson was part of the activist group ACT UP, AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. They had some bold new tactics to get people to listen. They performed street theater about AIDS and staged die-ins.
A siren would go off. People would lie down in the streets, and we would draw chalk outlines around them. And that was symbolized in the bodies of people who had died of AIDS.
The disease had killed nearly 100,000 people in the U.S. at that point, but no effective treatments were available. Activists felt a new urgency. All around them, people were dying, but no one seemed to care.
The situation was unacceptable.
Gerard Koskovich is a queer historian.
And that the chaos and horror that had overtaken our lives, we needed to share that with people who didn't think it had anything to do with them or weren't even noticing that it was happening.
Koskovich considers the protest of the 6th International AIDS Conference a milestone in LGBTQ history. It marked a shift in the tactics and goals of queer activism.
As it became clear that more and more people were dying and that very little was being done, that reaction began to shift towards rage, and that rage was instrumentalized into direct action.
Part of their anger was about the location of the conference. The U.S. government had banned anyone with HIV from entering the country. Yet the International AIDS Society refused demands from activists to move it to a country where people with AIDS could come.
So the conference itself was an outrage that it was here in the United States where travelers and immigrants and undocumented people here in the United States who were HIV positive were targeted for expulsion.
Change the law! Change the law!
They were also fed up with the way they were treated by the medical scientific community.
And from the point of view of AIDS activists, the experts were people with AIDS, and they needed to be inside that conference free of charge, bringing their wisdom, their experience, and their priorities about how research should go, and not be treated as if they were laboratory rats.
If you don't move, you will be moved. Clear out of the way.
Ingrid Nelson remembers protesting outside the Moscone Convention Center during the conference.
People with T-shirts that said they were a person with AIDS literally going over the barricades and being smacked down by the cops. But we thought that was very important visual symbolism, that here are people with AIDS trying to enter the scientific meeting that's about them and being smacked down and being told you can't go in.
Many of those activists did not live to see the 25th anniversary of the conference protests. According to the CDC, AIDS has taken over 660,000 lives in the U.S. since the first outbreak. But Nelson has continued her social justice work.
I will always call myself an AIDS activist, and I always think of my work as my activism now. I'm a healthcare provider, and I take care of people with HIV.
Nelson says she sees the successes of AIDS activism in the 90s benefiting everyone, regardless of HIV status.
Anytime any person goes to see their healthcare provider with a list of questions and says, here's what I read about, and here's the questions that I have about the medication that you want to give me, I think ACT UP had so much to do with that. The idea of patients participating in their own healthcare.
Historian Gerard Koskovich says the legacy of ACT UP can be seen in current political movements, like Black Lives Matter and Occupy, that bring together diverse coalitions.
So there was a kind of intersectionality before the word was invented. ACT UP San Francisco was very focused on all the people affected by AIDS, not just gay men. There were working groups on immigrant rights, there were working groups on prisoners, there were working groups on women with AIDS.
And his description of the queer activists of the 90s, drawing attention to everyday injustices by disrupting business as usual, that sounds a lot like young activists today.
The LGBT community reaching points where there's a critical mass, where the amount of oppression crosses with the degree of consciousness and self-possession and more assertive self-respect, and people finally say, nothing's going to change until we make it really inconvenient not to change things.
The protesters of June of 1990 stood on the shoulders of previous movements that had pressed for change. Civil rights, ethnic studies, feminism, and they left behind a clear blueprint for a new generation of activists to build on. In San Francisco, I'm Lisa Bartfight for Cross Currents.